name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God, amen. So, hi. my name is Missy, and some of you already know me because this used to be my home until God decided to move our family from College Station to Austin, which is really a pretty great city. If you haven't been there, you should come and share it with us. It's a great place to be. So I'm just going to take a little bit of a survey just so that I know who's speaking. First of all, would you prefer English or Arabic? So raise your hand for Arabic. Excellent. Tayyib. Okay, that's the extent of the Arabic that I know. I'm American, so I have an excuse for not knowing Arabic, and so everything that I say is going to be in English. Sorry. For those of you who are more comfortable in Arabic, maybe you can get somebody to translate, and then you'll know how we feel all the time. Raise your hand if you have elementary school children. Middle school children. High schoolers? Okay, good. So we're starting with, like, from the ground. Excellent. Okay. You know, speakers really shouldn't say this because speakers should always give you a reason why you should listen to them. However, sorry, I'm very honest. I'm not an expert in parenting. I'm right there in the mix with everybody else. I have a middle schooler, I have a high schooler, and then I have one who's in college, but she doesn't count because she kind of came to us really pretty awesome. So in terms of how to do things super well, I'm not an expert in that. I taught high school for a long time, and I serve in college. And I have a pretty critical eye. I am an expert in mistakes that parents make. And so that's really what we're going to talk about today, is mistakes that parents can make and how to avoid making them. Okay, so I hope that you didn't come here thinking that you were going to have like this great strategy for how to be this amazing parent when you leave, because that's not what I have to offer. But what I do have to offer is a lot of pitfalls that we can make, and that we can use wisdom in seeing other people who made mistakes and then avoiding those things. So right off the bat, let's acknowledge that parenting really is the easiest thing to talk about. Everybody has an opinion. I'm sure that you've talked to your in-laws and your parents and other people around. This is an Egyptian church after all. Everybody's got an opinion on how you should be parenting. Yes? Okay. So we just need to put it all out there. Having an opinion about what good parenting is very, very easy. But the reality of parenting is very difficult. So we are all on the same playing field. We all know about the struggles in parenting. We all understand it because we live in it all the time. So that's just the first thing that I want to talk about. Second thing is that parenting is a journey. And anytime there's a journey, there has to be an end result. So before we begin, just so that we know where we're headed, what is the goal of parenting? What's the goal of parenting? So to have a well-rounded human being. Yeah? Okay. We're raising somebody who can navigate or who can go on through life and be able to be successful. Okay, could we just all put it out there? We want to have our kids be successful, right? Really? Okay. So we want our kids, now you can go ahead and add her. We want our kids to be successful. And unfortunately, most of the time, this is what we're thinking of when we say that we want our kids to be successful, is that we want our kid to be the red one. Right? Yes? We want our kid to have the top score. We want our kid to be in the Little League Olympics. We want our kid to be the one who sings the best, who plays the best instrument, who sits first chair in everything. Do you, yes or no? This is yes, this is no. Yes. Okay. So we're being honest, right? That's what we want. Okay. So, what if I told you that's not the goal? What if I told you that that actually is not the goal in parenting? Would you stop listening to me? Would that be the end of it? Go ahead. St. John Chrysostom said that having children is a matter of nature. Anybody can have a kid. We see that all the time. So having children is a matter of nature. But raising them in virtue and in goodness, that's a matter of the will. Which means that we have to be very, very intentional in the way that we raise our children. And so what we're going to talk about today is really what is the goal in raising our children, because whenever you go on a journey, if you don't know what the end goal is, then you know, you're not really going anywhere. And we're going to talk about pitfalls to avoid on that journey, remembering always that there is an end goal. So, I know that you guys had this on your on the advertisement, and I have to tell you that Hosea 4:6 is my favorite verse. So anything that I ever do, anything I ever talk about, somehow comes around to Hosea 4:6. Because Hosea 4:6 says, God is speaking, and he's saying, my people perish or are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And that's really my favorite part of the verse. I saw on the flyer that was sent out, though, that the whole verse was put there. And when I saw it, I went down to Abuna, and I was laughing, and I was like, oh my gosh, nobody's going to come, because they're all like, the whole verse, if you take the verse to its end, actually, do you guys have a Bible? Does anybody have a Bible? Hosea 4:6. Go ahead and read the whole thing.
My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I also will reject you from being priests for me. Because you have forgotten the law of your God, I will also forget your children.
Okay, and that was the part that was underlined in the advertisement for tonight, is that God is saying that he's going to forget our kids. So when I went down to my Abuna, I was like, oh my gosh, nobody's going to show up because that's not my message. Like, that's not what I wanted to say. And he said, well, maybe that is God's message. So with that in mind, let's go on with what we're going to talk about. Deuteronomy 6, verses 3 through 9. Says, therefore hear, O Israel, and be careful to observe it, that it may be well with you, and that you may multiply greatly as the Lord God of your fathers has promised you, a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. And you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. The goal in raising children is to raise children for God. That is the goal. That is the only goal, is to present these people that God has allowed us to have for a very short period of time back to him. Everything else that happens is a byproduct of that goal. Whether our kids are successful, whether our kids are amazing at different talents, all of that is a byproduct of this goal. This is our only goal, is to raise children of God. So I like little, you know, like I'm sure you see these on the Facebook all the time. But when they're true, they're easy to remember and they're helpful. God has no grandchildren. He only has children, which means that our children have to choose him. Our faith doesn't just magically go into our kids. It's a matter of the will. It's intentional. It's things that we do intentionally to share our God with them so that they then choose him as their God. G.K. Chesterton, who's a Western Christian, said that going to church doesn't make you a Christian any more than standing in a garage makes you an automobile. So I just want you to file that back a little bit so that when we talk about our next topic, it's going to come back home in a story that I have to share with you, okay? All right. So let's get going. Pitfall number one is in not understanding that my true purpose as a parent is to raise Christians, is to raise children of God. That's my true purpose. So the first pitfall that we would fall into is in thinking that our goal is to raise awesome kids. It's a byproduct of the goal. If that is my intention, to raise Christian kids, then I have to ask myself some questions. And that's what we're going to do. This is all time to reflect on where we are as parents, on where we are in terms of all of this. Okay, so some of the questions. Now remember, we're all on the same playing field, all of us. I ask myself these questions almost every day. So the first one is, am I really a Christian? Because you can't give something that you don't have. It is impossible to raise children who love God when we're too busy loving the world. Can't be done. Well, it can be, but it won't come from us. Do I live a repentant life? Notice I didn't say, do I live a perfect life? Because none of us are perfect, myself more, less than anybody. But do I live a repentant life? When I make mistakes, am I willing to have the humility to say, you know what, I screwed up. I'm sorry. Shouldn't have done that. I'm sorry I hurt you. I'm sorry that I acted in a way that could cause you to stumble. I'm sorry that I acted in a way that is different from the things that I tell you to do. Please forgive me. That's living a repentant life. That's real. Let me tell you something. You already know this because you already have kids. And it increases as they get older. Actually, when kids are little, like in the elementary school years, they're so loving and they're so sweet. And then it's like their meter for truth and realness gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So maybe when they were little, we could hide certain things. We could pretend that we actually live a life different from the life that we really live. But as the kids get older, their meter increases. Their meter for hypocrisy increases. And then they start to see the little chinks in our armor. So if we're not being real with them, thinking that, oh, well, we can't show them our weaknesses, we're actually making the biggest mistake that we could make. Because they already see the weaknesses. But for us to come to them and say, you know what, I let you down and I didn't behave as a child of God today. Sorry for yelling at you. Please forgive me. That's real. Go ahead. So, question. If we want our children to be true Christians, are we praying for them every day when we get up? Are we asking God to please protect them as they go out into this world? He's our only shield. He's our only strength. We can't protect them. He can. Are we inviting him into that every day? And even more so, are we inviting our children into this process to pray with us? Are we showing them that, you know, God is real? And we're going to stand before him because he's our maker. He loves us. And we're going to stand before him every day as a family. From when they're little. And it's so awesome that your kids are so young because it's easy to bring them into this process when they're little. It's much more difficult when they're older. It's not impossible, but it's more difficult when they're older to bring them into the process from the beginning. That's why Abuna keeps talking about bring your kids. Make sure they're here. Let them be here all the time. Why? Because we're training them. Okay, next one. Do we live with God daily and discuss him and view life through our relationship with him? So when we're talking about politics or we're talking about things that we see on TV, are we framing things for our kids through God's eyes? Are we showing him how God is working in things? Are we highlighting him in our home? So, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. What knowledge are they lacking that they're being destroyed from? It's God's word. So, are we reading scripture together? Together. Are we reading scripture together as a family and talking about it? It is not the church's job to raise our kids. It's our job to raise our kids. The church reinforces all of that, and it is within the church that we have the sacraments and the graces. But all of this comes from our homes. Read scripture together. And if you haven't read scripture together, start tonight or tomorrow as soon as you go home. Allow for your children an opportunity to know that God is real from your home before they go out and encounter people who are telling them that God is not real. Does my family's rhythm flow according to the rhythm of the church? This is a hard one. This one is hard. Does the rhythm of my family mimic the rhythm of the church? Are we all fasting as one body? Or are we being lone rangers out there doing our own thing? Are we at Vespers together as a family? Or is the birthday party or whatever it is that's going on Saturday night, is that more important? So these are questions that are not just for you. They're for us too. They're for everybody to answer. We're raising Christians. We're raising Christians. We're not raising valedictorians. We're raising Christians. Okay, next question. And this one is big. raise your hand if you feel like it is important that your children know the hymns of the church in Coptic. Raise them high. Okay, excellent. I agree with you. They should know those. Excellent, because it allows them to participate in the liturgies and it allows them to feel at home within this church body, right? Okay. I would propose that even more important than that is our kids need to know why the gospel is good news. I serve college kids, and they can't tell me. So why is the gospel good news? Why are you a Christian? And they'll look at me and be like, what do you mean, why am I a Christian? Because I'm Egyptian. Because that's what my family is. Those aren't good answers. Why are you a Christian? Ask yourself that. Why am I a Christian? Am I a Christian because I was brought up in a Christian home and this is kind of what we do? And I feel comfortable in this place because I'm surrounded by other Egyptians? Is that why I'm a Christian? Because that will not be an okay answer for your children. Your children need to know why they're a Christian. They need to understand what they're saved from. They need to understand that sin reigns in them and that God saves us and that God is so merciful and he's so kind and that his desire is to heal us and make us one with him. They need to know that. And they need to know it from a heart that believes it. Remember, their monitor is really, really strong. So if we just give them Sunday school answers, it'll be very, very difficult for them when they get to middle school and people start telling them that God doesn't exist. And people start telling them, well, why would you believe that? That's like, hey, didn't you know that in mythology there's all these stories that are just like the Christian stories? Didn't you know that? And then the kids are like, what? No. And then they come home and they talk to parents and the parents, well, that's not right. Okay. Well, how do I know that? because it's not right. It's not an answer. We need to have a reason for the faith that we have so that we can share it with our kids. In this culture, particularly, maybe it's not as important in some other cultures. Here in the United States, it is essential that your children and my children know why they're Christian. Do we model real life and embrace the struggle? That's what I was talking about earlier. When we make mistakes, are we able to say, I'm sorry? Because that's really what shows kids what a repentant life is. Our kids don't need us to look perfect. Our children don't need us to look perfect. Yeah. Okay. That's wrong. He said that in the Egyptian culture, it's a complete taboo to tell your children that you're sorry. If you would like your children to be destroyed eternally, don't tell them you're sorry. Don't. If you want to be on the opposite of where God is, don't tell them you're sorry. Keep your pride. Keep your face. But if you care about your children's eternity, tell them you're sorry every time you make a mistake. And tell your wife and your husband that you're sorry too. Because that's what a Christian does. That's what Christians do. They forgive each other. They make mistakes. They fall. And they land in the grace of God. Teach them to experience the Word of God for real. So this is pretty funny. I heard this story. And that was that this mom had just taken her children to like a little Sunday school thing, a little gathering. And then they had come back to their house and their friend came over. And the little girl went over to her mom's friend and she looked at her. And then she went around her and then she looked at her. And then she went around her again and she was looking at her. And the friend eventually was like, what are you doing? What's the matter? And she said, my mommy says that you have two faces, but I only see one. Okay, so what really are we modeling for our children? Are we telling them that we're Christian, but we're talking about our friends, but we're gossiping about them behind their back? Are we telling them that we're Christian, but we hold on to grudges? I will never forgive them. Is that what we're doing? Because that's not modeling Christianity. That models the world, but that's not modeling Christianity for our kids. I can already tell that some of you don't like me very much. Are we sharing with them really the joy of the Lord? When we get stressed out, what do? When we get stressed out, what do we do? Do we go and call a friend? Do we go and relieve our stress by sitting on Facebook? Do we go and relieve our stress by having a cup of coffee? Not that that's a bad thing, but are those the first things that we do when we're stressed? Because what our kids need to see when we're stressed is that we go before the Lord, that we stand before God, and that we cast our cares on Him who cares for us. Our kids need to see us doing these things so that they will then do these things. Okay, that's pitfall number one. Not understanding my true purpose as a parent. Everything else really relates to this pitfall. Pitfall number two. Oh, sorry, some other things to consider because this is so big. I forgot about this. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm going to indulge myself here as I'm asking you guys these questions because these are things that kind of bothered me, like with parents in church. So I'm just going to share them with you, and then you can take them to your friends, and you can kind of spread the good word. How do I behave in church? So I'm trying to have my kids love the Lord. How am I behaving in church? Am I acting like, oh my gosh, when is this going to be over? Is that how I'm behaving? Or even better, do we not even show up until after the gospel? All of this speaks volumes to our kids. You want our kids to be real Christians? then you need to come when the liturgy starts. It's hard. I know. I had little ones. I did it. We were in the cry room for 10 years. I understand. But those are things that we need to do. In the cry room, let's talk about the cry room. How many of you have been in the cry room? How many of you can worship in the cry room? Why? Is it because of the kids? No. No, it's because, moms are in there, and it's like their break from the liturgy, and they get to hang out with their friends and talk, and there's this little glass partition so that they can at least assuage their conscience, make themselves feel better a little bit. I'm still in the liturgy, when in reality they're not. They're just socializing. That speaks to our kids. Now, what that tells them, what that communicates to them, is this thing that we're doing here, it's really not that important. This thing that we're doing, this is just like one of those things that's like a hoop that you have to jump through. It's the kind of thing we do on a Sunday. Our primary purpose is to raise children who love the Lord. So we really need to pay attention to what we're doing. Next one. Eating in church. So how many times has Abuna Yonan said, this is a place where we worship, this is a holy place, this particular area is set apart. If we want to feed our children, we need to go into the little eating area down the hall, right? How many, raise your hand if you've seen anybody eating in church. Really? Nobody sees any? Oh, the church must have changed since I've been here. That's awesome. Oh, okay, thank you. Why? Because we give ourselves excuses. You know what? Abuna's talking to her, but not me, because I'm just going to have a little cracker. We're just going to give them a little. You know what? My kid is so hungry. They just, a little bottle. God will understand. It's okay. All of that communicates to our kids. A disregard for the rules. Sorry, this is my American coming out. God is a God of order. He's not a God of chaos. And Christians are people who are obedient. So when there are rules, let me ask you this question. As a parent, when you give your child a rule, those of us who our kids are a little older, do we want them to obey the rule? Raise your hand if you're really okay with your kid not obeying the rule. I'm not okay when my kid doesn't obey the rule. And I thought that I was very obedient until my middle schooler commented to me and said, hey, Mom, you know, you're really so big on our obeying the rules. How come you did such and such? And I said, oh, you're right. It's not okay for me not to follow the rules. I'm sorry. And I couldn't give myself an excuse anymore and an exception for not doing something when I am trying to train my children to follow the rules. Are we doing that even here in church? Next. I already talked about that. Next. Do we talk to our kids about the things that they're learning here? So this is just a little story. When I had first come into the church, as my relationship with God was growing, and I was all excited about him, and I wanted to talk about him all the time, and we had come to an English liturgy. And after the liturgy, we were in the eating area, and I went and I started to talk to some of the people who were there about God. And they looked at me like I had five heads. And they were like, what are you doing? The liturgy's over. That actually was one of the reasons why I was trying to convince Abuna that this wasn't the church where we needed to be. And I don't mean the church as in St. Mary's. I mean the Orthodox Church. Because how could you be a worshiping group of people and not want to talk about the one that you're worshiping? There was a disconnect there for me. Talk to your kids about God. Next. Oh, do we fast? No, of course not, because it's so hard. Yes, it is hard. Very difficult. Counterculture. Absolutely. But what a message it gives to the world. What a message it gives to other people, which we'll talk about later. And what a message it gives to our kids. All right. Am I the primary teacher of my child spiritually? Yes or no? Yes. A resounding yes. All of us are the primary teacher of our child spiritually, regardless of our relationship with God. The question is, what am I teaching my child? Pitfall number two. And this kind of goes along with pitfall number one, but pitfall number two is downplaying my relationship with my spouse. Downplaying the importance of oneness with my spouse. Please hear this. Please hear this. Aside from being a true Christian, the best gift that you can give your kids, the very best gift that you can give your children, is to love each other. When kids see spouses who truly love each other and respect each other, not just love, but respect each other, it gives them so much security. It doesn't matter what kind of things you have in your home. It doesn't matter what kind of home you have. It doesn't matter what kind of car you drive. It doesn't matter what kind of work you do, or even if you don't have work at the moment. None of that matters. What a child wants is to know that their parents love each other. And if there's some difficulty there, because sometimes there is, we're human beings. Sometimes we make each other upset. Right? Sometimes there are things that happen because of weaknesses that we have that we need a little help getting over the hump, right? Everybody needs help sometimes. Everybody needs help. I know that this is another one of those things that kind of goes against the Egyptian understanding. Everybody at some point in time needs help. If we're really interested in producing children who love the Lord, or at least giving them the best chance that they can have, when those times occur in our marriages where we need help, please get it. Please talk to somebody as a couple who can help you over the hump. There's no shame in getting some counseling. Next thing, dads, this is directly to you. You must be involved with your children. It's not enough that you provide financially. You have to provide time. And I know that there's like a whole thing out there that there's quality time versus quantity time, right? And so we feel like, okay, you know what? I'm going to give them a lot of quality time. Nothing makes up for quantity. Nothing makes up for quantity. Our children just want to be with us. They want to just be involved in what we're doing. Dads, you should be the ones who are stepping up and saying, let's pray. You should be the ones who are saying to your kids, hey, come on, we're all going to read the Bible now. You should be the ones who are saying on Sunday morning, okay, everybody, let's go. It's time to go worship God. You should be the ones who are saying that, not your wives. So pitfall number two is downplaying the importance of oneness as a couple. Pitfall number three is perfectionistic parenting. All right, so now we're going to talk about perfectionistic parenting. The problem with perfectionistic parenting is that it leads us to do all kinds of crazy things. All kinds of crazy things. Why? Because we're using standards oftentimes that are not God's standard. Because either we're using our own standard about what we think it's supposed to look like, And we have to make sure that we do all of those things according to the way that we think it needs to look, or we're comparing ourselves to everybody else, to our group, our friends in our group, and we see how they do it, and then we think that we need to parent like that. Perfectionistic parenting can make you crazy. Perfectionistic parenting, puts you in a position where you think that if you don't do whatever your friend is doing, then your child is going to be left behind. And actually, that's just not the case. If our goal is to raise Christian children, then that should be our focus, not each other. Perfectionistic parenting, if we fall into this pitfall, if we fall into this trap, then we start to think that we have to have things a certain way. And if they are not that way, then nothing else can be right. And it really can make you crazy. So this is just a really silly example, but when I had first had our first child, I had put on myself that my house always had to be clean, and there had to be food always ready. Something had to be ready, and everything had to be like nice and organized and everything. And one day I almost was like having a nervous breakdown because the laundry wasn't done, all the stuff wasn't done, and it wasn't like Abuna even noticed anything. It was the pressure that I was putting on myself. And my best friend had come over and she said, "Missy, what is the big deal? If you need clean underwear, go to Walmart and get some." And I was looking at her like, what world are you from? What do you mean? What do you mean? And she said, "It's really not that big of a deal. Just go get some clean underwear and move along." And honestly, because I'd always looked up to her, her kids were great, she was this amazing, godly woman, that she gave me the permission to like not have to have my house perfect, that was a whole new concept to me, that it's like there could be some grace somewhere. Again, we don't have to be perfect. And use some forethought in the ways that we do things. Because whatever precedent you set when your kids are little, the bar just gets higher and higher and higher as they get older. So I know that some of y'all like to have birthday parties, which is awesome. We should definitely celebrate our children, right? But when I hear about some of the birthday parties, I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, what are they gonna do when their kid is like 7 or 8? Or what are they gonna do for the little one when they get older? And I start to get all like nervous and panicky for these people because they've set the bar so high that there's nowhere to go from there. So I think that we need to, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, I think that we as parents should look into the future a little bit and see where all of this is going. Our kids, again, I'm telling you this because I talk to the college kids, they don't care about all of these trappings that we think are conveying love to them. They don't care about that stuff. They care about your time. They care that you take an interest in them. That's what they care about. Perfectionistic parenting. How else can it play out? Your child comes home. They studied really, really hard for a test, and they came home with a 90. In every Egyptian home, what's being said? Why didn't you get 100? What happened? Why didn't you get 100? That's perfectionistic parenting. Now, if you have a child who has the capability to get 100 and their lack of effort caused them not to get 100, then you absolutely should address their effort. Always address their effort, not their result. Why? Because what's our goal again as parents? What's our goal? Is to raise Christian children, right? If we raise these kids who think that they need to be perfect, then what do they think that God thinks of them? That God will love them if they're perfect. If they don't make any mistakes. That's when God will love me. But if I make mistakes, and we all know what goes on in our heart, but if I make all these mistakes, what does that mean? What does that mean about God? That he doesn't love me. How could he? How could he love me? Yes, we all want our kids to do the best. Yes, we do. All of us. Commend the effort, not the result. Let them know that it doesn't matter if they got an F on the test, if they tried their hardest. Let them know that you still love them, that they're still acceptable. And I will tell you this, I'm sorry, this I know is also something that's cultural. There are other ways to make money other than being a doctor, other than being an engineer, other than being a dentist, or a pharmacist, or what? Or a lawyer. Yeah, that's like an up-and-coming thing. Yeah. Okay, so also with perfectionistic parenting, I would. This is just a piece of advice, too. Is see what your kids naturally gravitate toward and help them in those areas. As opposed to, like, you know, if you have friends and they have a kid who's in every single sport and yours maybe not so athletic, instead of making them be in every single sport, find what they're good at. Find what they have a natural gifting from God in. That doesn't mean that you can't, like, try different things to see where their natural gifting is, but don't force them into a mold that's not for them. Because God made each one of us to exhibit different qualities. Okay, any questions on perfectionistic parenting? Oh, I do have one more, sorry, before we go on. This is particularly for the ladies. Please be very careful about what you set up as a standard for your daughter in many different ways. A, in physical appearance. If you're neurotic because of how you look, please protect your daughter from that same lifestyle. Please struggle with God. Get before him. Have him heal that particular wound. Don't give that to your daughter. Don't keep talking about how you look. Because your value is not in how you look. Your value is in your character. Communicate that to your daughter. And you don't do it by telling them, by saying, oh, honey, it's not about how you look. Oh, I look so fat. Oh, I can't stand the way I look. I can't believe how this looks on me. Or when you're talking to your girlfriends and you're, because those are the messages that are heard. Be very, very careful. And again, be careful in what you set up as something that they have to have in terms of material things. So, you know, I know I'm going to step on toes, so forgive me when I say this. And if it doesn't apply, just throw it out the window. But I talk with college girls, and they talk to me about these purses that they have to have. And these purses are upward of $1,000. Okay. Why do you, when you're in college, need a purse like that? I mean, I might even go so far as to say if you're not in college, but that's a different story. Why do you need a purse like that? Well, because that's like, what? Because that's what they're used to. Because that's what they're used to. And there's nothing wrong if you can afford a purse like that, to have a purse like that, as long as it doesn't mean anything. As long as it doesn't mean anything. If you attach meaning to that, as in you have more value or you have more worth because of a particular bag that you carry, then there's a problem. Don't communicate that to your kids. Character. Focus on character. All right, next. Cultural concerns. Please raise your hand if you are Egyptian ethnically. Okay, like if you have Egyptian blood in you. Okay, thank you. Raise your hand if you are culturally Egyptian. And what I mean by that is, did you put your hand down? What, no, you're not. What I mean by that is, did you grow up in Egypt? Raise your hand if your children are growing up here. Your children have Egyptian blood in them. But your children culturally will be American. You can share things with them from the culture that you grew up in, but your children culturally will be American. In order to help our kids navigate, in order to help them here in America, we have to understand the culture that they're living in. We have to understand the pressures that they are up against. We have to understand how different things are here from wherever it is that we came from. I came from Boston. Growing up in Texas is very different from growing up in Boston. It's a different culture. My kids are not Bostonians, thankfully. It's a very different culture that we have to understand in order to help them navigate it well, in order to help them get through things. One of the biggest barriers in this is when, as parents, you don't learn English. If you don't learn English, and I don't mean that you need to speak English without an accent, I mean that you can communicate in the language that your children are comfortable with. Now, they may speak Arabic as well, but I'm telling you, from a person who sees the other side of things, eventually, this will become an issue. Eventually, this will become an issue. Because naturally, every teenager wants to pull away from their parents. That's a natural thing, as they're becoming independent. And if we couch everything in, we don't do that because we're Egyptian. We don't do that because we're Egyptian. If we say those things to these kids, I'm telling you that there's going to be a point in time where they're going to say to you, I'm not Egyptian. I'm American. And you don't understand. That's why this is a pitfall. And I'm not saying it because I think that you should take anything away from your culture or that you shouldn't speak Arabic at home. I'm saying this out of love because we all have the same goal in raising our kids. Instead of saying to them, we don't do this because we're Egyptian, what we should be saying to them is, we don't do this because we're Christian. That's what we should be saying. That's the culture that we should be bringing ourselves constantly to, because then it doesn't matter if you're American or if you're Egyptian or Palestinian or Irish or anything. That doesn't matter, because our goal is to raise children who love the Lord. And so Christianity should be the culture. So allow our kids to make choices. Allow them to make choices. And then if they make a bad choice while they're in our home, we can correct it and we can discuss it with them. You do not want to be managing your child until the time they go to college, and then have their time in college to be the first time that they're making choices on their own without somebody telling them what they're supposed to be doing. That's a recipe for a disaster. Yeah, I'm a little controlling, so yeah, I think so. And then you can share a consequence with your little one and explain to him that that's part of freedom. That freedom doesn't mean that you can do whatever you want without consequences. That's not freedom. But yes, you're free to choose. And God gave us free will, right? We're free. We're free to choose him, or we're free to choose not him. When we choose him, what happens? All kinds of good things happen when we choose God. We're in his protection. He gives us his grace. He covers us. He will allow others to give us favor, right? When we're walking and abiding in him. And when we choose to separate ourselves from that, there are consequences for that too. If we do that eternally, then there are consequences that we will eternally live apart from him. But we're still free. So in terms of cultural concerns, I think, in my opinion, we should be forming our own culture in our home about how we do things. And one of the most important things, I think, is eating together. That was something that in our home, that was like we didn't compromise, although now, unfortunately, it's not. But when our kids were little, if there was an activity that happened during mealtime, we didn't participate in it. And we just told our kids that because we told them sitting together was more important than their going out and doing something with others. And it really protected a time in our house that we knew that we were all going to gather together. We were going to recount the day. We were going to share things together. And it was through a meal. All of us like that. Why do we go out to eat together? We all like that. Kids like that. Pitfall number 5, tricky technology. All of us love technology. All of our days have something probably to do with technology in some form or fashion. But with our kids, this is a very tricky pitfall that we can fall into. The first thing is, from my own personal experience, I will tell you that a regret that I have as a parent is that we kept a television. I wish so much that I could go back in time and not have a TV. Why am I saying that? Even though we used the TV, what I thought was very responsibly, we were in control of what was on it. You know, we had the DVDs. We were the ones who were. However, I used it to babysit. You know, when I was cooking dinner, I would put in a DVD for them. I would allow that to be like their downtime. Instead of making an effort in different ways, I used that. And in doing so, I set my kids up for getting some kind of comfort and downtime in front of a screen. That was 20 years ago. Now, it's even more difficult because now the screens are portable. Please be very, very, very careful when it comes to technology and what you allow your kids to have. There's plenty of time for them to be exposed to everything. There's plenty of time for that. In my experience with teaching, children that are in front of screens, actually, their problem-solving abilities are not as good as kids whose screen time is limited. Even though they might be able to do fantastically phenomenal things on a computer, or it seems as if they can, as a human being, they're being limited. And they're being impressed with impressions. Because all they're seeing are these things that are flickering before their eyes. I see kids in our church who are little, like 2, and they have iPads, and they're navigating through the iPads, and the parents are so proud of them. Look how smart my kid is. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, what are you doing? Allow your child to be a child. Yes, this is Texas, and it is hot. Unless you're playing football in 2-a-days, your child is not going to die if they go outside and they play. Let your children be children. Limit their screen time. Be so careful, and for God's sake, do not give your elementary kids smartphones. Because you are allowing every evil possibility to come before their eyes, and there is no way that you will be able to monitor what they're seeing all the time, even if you have a blocker on it. Little boys at the age of 10 are being exposed to pornography. And as a human being, once you see something, you can't unsee it. And then it begins to trigger something in them that is a very normal reaction. And now at 10, they're filled with shame. At 10, they're starting to have thoughts. And at 10, they can have access to act on those thoughts. No one else is going to protect your children. No one else. You might think that the teachers at school are going to protect them, and they'll try, but nobody else is going to protect your kids, so you have to do it. It doesn't matter if all of their friends have smartphones. So what? My 14-year-old has a flip phone. He complained about it. I said, okay, you don't have to have a phone. And then he said, oh, okay, well, maybe we can have a flip phone. That's okay. And if he doesn't use the flip phone responsibly, he won't have a flip phone. Protect your kids. Think about what the future has for them. Technology is an amazing thing, but it's also an amazingly destructive thing. So, and this goes back to the culture. Even if you're not comfortable with Americans, get some American friends so that they can help expose you to the things that the kids are paying attention to the shows that they're watching. Because I could almost guarantee you that the shows that people are watching, the kids are watching now, you're probably not watching those shows. You may not even know that those shows are existing. Or the music that they're listening to. Or the games that they're playing on their devices. So a couple of years ago, we were watching the play here, and there was a little one playing on their device, and everything was great because they were quiet, right? That's the point, is you give them this thing to kind of shut them up, right? That's the reality of things. That's why we do that. And this little 3-year-old was playing this game, and initially it looked like it was a good game, so I understand why the parents bought it for them. It was like a little chef game. How much more innocent could you be than a little chef game, right? Only as the game progressed, the thing that the chef was cutting up was other little boys and girls with blood coming out of them. And I'm looking over the shoulder of this child who was here in this room as we're watching a nice little, you know, Christian play. And what are they doing? Well, they're cutting up little boys and girls in their little game. So we need to really pay attention to what our kids are doing, what they're playing, what they're being exposed to. We don't get a pass on that. So what's our alternative? Put your child on your lap and read them a book. I'm a parent. I work. I know how busy the days are. I get all of that. Nothing beats having your kid on your lap reading them a book. They love it. If they already are involved in technology, you're going to have a little bit of a fight in order to reduce that. It's worth the effort. It's worth the effort for your child in the long run. It is worth the effort. And something else is allow them to be involved in adult conversations. Allow them to sit there when the adults are assuming the adults are not just gossiping. Don't allow them to do that. You shouldn't do that. But allow them to sit there when the adults are having a conversation so that they can see how adults interact. Instead of shooing them away and, like, you know, telling them to go away, allow them, invite them in. I think it really depends on your child. Was it, did you ask that? Yeah, I think it really depends on your child about what age that they would be in, like, they could do that. I had one who at 3 would sit with us and just sit and listen. And I have one who to this day doesn't want to be around adults, so. So there's a website by Focus on the Family. It's called pluggedinonline.com. They have book reviews and they have movie reviews. So you don't have to have read everything. You can read the review, and if it brings up something that you're not okay with, then just tell them you don't get to read that. It's called Plugged In Online. It's by Focus on the Family. Oh, okay, so the phone. When should they have a phone? When you need to contact them. if you need to be able to be in contact with them, then I think that's a time when they should have a phone. Like if they're, you know, outside the house and you're at work, or they need to have access to an emergency number or something, I think that it's okay for them to have a phone. I mean, when we grew up, there were phone booths, so that wasn't an issue, right? But now there aren't phone booths anymore. I don't think you should give them a smartphone. I think that they should have a flip phone. And if it has texting, that's great. If it doesn't, that's better. Yeah. I mean, that's my opinion. And then as they get older, then you can use a smart... My 16-year-old does have a smartphone. And he misused it one time, and it got taken away from him. And so now he's more careful. I'm not saying he's perfect. But again, we're allowing our kids to make decisions while they're in our home. And they can make a mistake while they're in our home. And they get the consequences while they're in our home. Okay, number six. Don't allow your esteem to be tied up in your kids. This is a bit of a tricky one. What is your esteem? Like your self-worth, how you feel about yourself. Don't use whether your kids like you as a gauge. Because there will be times when they don't like you, and that's okay. Actually, if they don't like you, that might even be a little bit better, because it might mean that you're disciplining them and they don't like that right then. That's okay. A trap that parents fall into, and this is a big pitfall, is that they don't want their kids, especially moms, because we tend to be more emotional, is we don't want our kid to not like us, right? And so we might start out the right way and say, okay, you know what, this behavior, we can't have this behavior, this isn't good. In the end, it's going to be something that's displeasing to God, so we have to discipline it. And then we start to discipline. And then the kid says stuff. The kids will say, I don't like you. You're so mean. Whatever they have to say. And that's okay. Unfortunately, sometimes it's not okay, because it tugs at whatever is else going on inside of us. And we're like, oh, hi, baby, it's okay. Or even worse, we don't discipline them, and then we leave it to Dad to do as the bad guy when he comes in. This is a big mistake, because what will happen as they grow up, they're master manipulators. They're wonderful and they're great and all of that, and we're raising them to be children of God, but they're master manipulators. And if you give in one time, then you've set a precedent. Don't allow your esteem, your self-worth, your being okay inside, don't let that be tied up as to whether your kids like you or not. One of the running statements in our home that I say to my kids all the time is, you don't have to like me. You have to respect me. But you don't have to like me. I'd like for you to like me. It would make my heart happy if you like me, but you don't have to like me. And as soon as they hear that, they're like, oh, I know I'm not getting what I want. Your child's job is to push. That's their thing. They're going to push, and they're going to keep pushing, and they're going to keep pushing until either you give in or you stand your ground. Your job is to stand your ground for their future. But don't get mad at them because they're pushing. That's their job. Actually, one of the college kids, when I had asked them, is there any like last-minute things that you would have me say to the parents, you know, when I go over and talk to them? One of the college kids, and he's a great kid, well, one of the college kids told me, I really wish that my parents had told me no more. I said, what are you talking about? He said, I wish that my parents had told me no more, that they had intervened and said no to the things that I wanted to do instead of everything that I wanted, they said yes to. And it's okay for our kids to struggle. And it's okay for our kids to fail. We don't have to rush in and save them every time. Actually, you're crippling your children if you do that. So If your child has procrastinated and they have a project due the next day and they haven't taken care of their business and they come to you and they say, I need to go to the store right now, and it's 8 o'clock, and it's really not a good time to go to the store. You're not ready to go to the store. That wasn't, you know, it's their lack of preparation that's now causing this emergency. Most parents would do what? Absolutely. Because who wants their kid to fail? It's a big project, right? But you know what the wise parent does? If this isn't a one-time occurrence, if this is like a one-time thing, the kid's always taking care of their business, this one time they drop the ball, okay. But if you see that your child has a tendency to wait till the last minute, to procrastinate, all of that, the wise parent will say to your child, I'm really sorry that you're in this position. I wish that you weren't. What are you going to do? And then turn and go in the other room. That is a great opportunity for your child to figure stuff out. But if you run and you bail them out that time, do you know what's going to happen? You're going to be constantly running after your kid, picking up after them. But if you put it back on them and say, what are you going to do? And then allow them to come up with the solutions. Think of the future. Do you want this child to grow up and be spoiled and now be in the world? Do you want that? Okay, number 7, we're almost done. This is it. Number 7, the last pitfall that we fall into that I could think of, I'm sure there are more, is forgetting that our kids aren't finished. I fall into this one all the time. I get so frustrated with what they're doing as if they're done where they are, and forgetting that they're going to grow up and that they will get past this and that they will come to the point where they're generous, or they will come to the point where they're forgiving, or they will come to the point where they will on their own go and pray. And I start freaking out as if they're done right now. Remember, they're not done. And if you know of any people who maybe when they're younger, they were kind of shy, and now that they're older, they're like an upstanding citizen who loves God, think of them all the time. That person could go from that to this. So my child, with my intentional input, can also go from that to this. Glory be to God forever. Do you guys have any other questions?